Unexamined assumptions make it harder to untangle the thorny mystery of design. But the assumptions are still there, even if swept under the carpet. Because naive realism only looks at reality as given, it discounts the role that mind plays. Many AI experts believe that a translator program turning Guten Morgen into Good Morning is the equivalent of performing a mental action, and therefore, the resemblance to a human mind is proved. But if mind is actually the leading player in the universe, naive realism is totally off base, no matter how many scientists believe in it. The mind-like behavior of the cosmos has been cropping up frequently in our discussion. Now we're ready to confront its greatest challenger, which is randomness. Randomness implies having no purpose, yet the two are not the same, as we will show in relation to quantum activity. If the universe is totally random and with no purpose, all possibility of finding design will fail. On the other hand, if there is some way to make peace with randomness, as quantum theory attempts to do, the cosmos inches closer to acting like a mind. Not just that, but a human mind. As you sit in a chair dangling your feet, they move more or less randomly. When you get up to go to the refrigerator for a snack, your feet move purposefully. This gives us the simplest and yet most profound clue. Randomness and design cooperate with each other, in nature, in our bodies, in our thoughts. Let's see if this insight is enough to pry open the tight grip that pure chance holds on the practice of science. Taking a chance on chance. The great god of randomness had a modest beginning when physicists wanted to explain basic phenomena, such as how gas molecules behave. If you watch motes of dust dancing in a sunbeam, their motion is random, which poses a scientific problem. How can you predict where any one dust mote will be located in the future? Is it impossible or merely very, very difficult? With regard to gases, it was assumed that the overall behavior of gas molecules, which teem in far greater numbers than dust, can be understood if the individual motion of each particle is taken to be random, which makes their specific locations in space indeterminate. This is a good assumption for any large collection of particles. Even though the microscopic properties of individual molecules are unknown, the average macroscopic properties of the whole collection of molecules can be easily defined. You simply sum up the average motion of each molecule. The properties of dancing gas molecules are covered in a branch of physics called thermodynamics, because the heat, or thermal state, of a gas causes it to move faster as the temperature rises, which is why boiling water bubbles with rapid motion. Heat causes the water molecules to turn to steam, which is a much more agitated state. The average motion can be accurately used even though a particular molecule's motion is unknown. So, by knowing only one parameter, namely temperature, randomness can be handled as a practical matter. How far can one legitimately take this kind of averaging? That's a question that doesn't get asked enough. Averaging can lose as much knowledge as it gains. If you were in a helicopter flying over a busy freeway, you can't predict which exit a specific car will take. Using a statistical average, a reliable number emerges as it applies to all the traffic on the road. But you've totally overlooked the most important thing. Randomness, in this case, is a total illusion. Each driver knows where he's going and takes the exit he needs. Drivers aren't making random decisions, even though from the outside their activity may look random. This distinction leads in various directions. You can't predict the next thought that will enter your head, but calling thoughts totally random is wildly off the mark. When you're thinking about what to have for dinner tonight, you aren't engaging in random musings. there's a purpose to your thinking. Yet we all daydream, and incidental thoughts do float like mental lint through the mind. This tells us that making peace with random chance isn't just an arcane issue or some kind of intellectual game. There are many ways that randomness can fool us. A lot depends on who is observing what. Imagine an ant crawling across a painter's palette while the artist is at work. The ant scurries this way and that as the tip of a paintbrush jabs randomly at red, blue, green. It has no idea which color will be jabbed at next, while from the artist's perspective, the randomness is the illusion, as each tiny brushstroke serves a purpose in the artistic creation. Pure randomness, if you aren't totally wedded to it, never tells the whole story. Naive realists, seeing dust motes dancing in a sunbeam and gas molecules bouncing off one another, have overtaxed the usefulness of the observation and willfully ignore the possibility, so brilliantly intuited by Heisenberg, that nature gives every observer what he's looking for. Separating order from chaos was relatively simple in classical physics, but it became much murkier in the quantum era, when it was proposed that particles behave randomly in principle. It's not practical to determine the position of every air molecule in a room. But in classical physics, using a mythical supercomputer with unlimited speed and memory, one could calculate where each one is located and where it will be an hour from now. The same isn't true of subatomic particles in the quantum universe. The uncertainty principle assures us that particles have no well-determined position and motion, only probable ones. What is the probability that all the oxygen atoms in a room will congregate in one corner? Practically speaking, the odds are zero. But a beautiful calculation known as Schrödinger's equation can deliver the exact probability to many decimal places of such an event, however minuscule. We no longer have to use averaging. Randomness has found a much more precise and elegant way to be calculated. But this success doesn't mean that the same headway has been made in balancing order and chaos. How one translates into the other is often inexplicable. Even the most precise predictions have their flaws. Imagine a mechanic's garage where they can measure the tread on your tires and predict within half a mile when a tire will blow out. That would be impressive, but the prediction has nothing to say about what road you will be on when the tire blows out, why you chose the road, and what your destination is. If the mechanic shrugs his shoulders and says, "Those things don't matter to me. They're out of my hands," you'd agree. But the road that molecules, atoms, and subatomic particles take, and the destination they are headed for, can't be dismissed. In your bloodstream, whether a molecule of cholesterol winds up clogging a coronary artery or passing harmlessly out of the body can be a matter of life and death. Because of their physicalist beliefs, many scientists keep averaging out difficult problems as if that's the best or only way to handle randomness. A striking example is evolution. Looking at an elephant, you can see that its snake-like trunk and sail-like ears are unique. The elephant evolved to have them, and according to Darwinian theory, having just this kind of trunk and that kind of ears enabled the first elephants to survive better. New adaptations begin at the genetic level with a mutation that hasn't been seen before. Mutations occur at random, so standard evolution says, and they must be passed on to later generations in order to become permanent. If a single pink elephant appeared millions of years ago, we'll never know, because that genetic mutation failed to be passed on. How did the first elephant with the long trunk gain its survival advantage? Impossible to say. It's not even clear that one elephant did gain an advantage, but the whole species eventually did. Without knowing anything that happened to the individual elephant, A kind of averaging out is done by looking at all elephants. In other words, evolutionary thinkers are treating creatures with very complex lives as if they were a collection of gas molecules. On the face of it, this seems like fudging. Animal existence is filled with sudden necessities, like drought or a disease epidemic, unique events, unknown challenges, and so on. Every step of the way, each lion, chimpanzee, or otter makes choices. Erasing these complexities from the equation in order to get a good group approximation can't be telling us the whole story. Perhaps not even the right story. For example, survival of the fittest, a phrase Darwin never used, by the way, can supposedly be reduced to two components: success at getting enough food to eat, and the ability to beat out rivals for mating rights. On that basis, gene mutations get passed on. But this picture of constant competition overlooks the fact that in nature, cooperation is just as common as competition. Birds flock together, fish swim in schools, and there are myriad other observable populations that live together for safety and shared resources, sometimes seeming to act almost as a single organism. In many marine species, all the males and females gather in one place to scatter clouds of eggs and sperm into the water, acting as one giant mating party with no one excluded. Darwinian evolution has been modified by some theorists to include cooperation, but finding the balance between competitive and cooperative behavior has proved very tricky and controversial. When chance is dethroned. Let's say that the worship of randomness has seriously faltered, and an old god is ready to topple. How do you balance order and chaos then? If nature is secretly an artist making creative decisions, random events are like the jabbing paintbrush from the ant's perspective. And there are enticing clues indicating that this isn't just a fanciful metaphor. Over and over, we've reinforced the message that physicists trust mathematics. The fine-tuning problem opened a rift in the universe, being one vast playground of coincidences. In the same vein, some numbers keep reappearing in nature at very small and very large scales. One kind of design that remains untainted is mathematical. We already discussed, in relation to fine-tuning, how the constants suspiciously match up with one another. You'll recall that Paul Dirac was convinced so many matchups couldn't be merely a long stream of coincidences. He searched for an equation that would defy randomness by finding hidden design. Mathematical design is one reason some physicists accept that the cosmos has structure and form. One of history's lost lives is that of Euclid, the father of geometry, who made the greatest contribution to mathematics in the ancient world. A Greek who lived in Alexandria in the 4th century BCE under the pharaoh Ptolemy I, Euclid left behind no biography. Anecdotes exist of him drawing lines in the sand as he worked out the rules governing circles, squares, and the other geometric figures that we understand thanks to him. Though the stories are fictions, the most astonishing thing about Euclid, and about the mind of Greek mathematicians generally, is the impulse to reduce nature to neat geometrical patterns. For centuries, scientists continue to look for straight lines, circles, and regular curves, driven by a belief that nature embodied perfection, when in fact, the patterns in nature are often rough and approximate. The roundest tree trunk that looks like a Greek column from a distance has irregularities in its bark. A ball thrown as straight as possible will have its trajectory bent by wind, air resistance, and gravity. Even a bullet fired as straight as possible is actually describing a complex curve once you take a wider perspective that includes Earth's wobbly rotation on its axis, and its lopsided orbit around the sun. After relativity, Geometry entered four dimensions, which swept Euclid's neatly geometric two-dimensional shapes off the table. And then the quantum revolution offered an entirely new, exotic mathematics not yet unified with general relativity. None of these drastic changes, however, negates the notion of cosmic design. What they eliminate is simple geometric design. The perfect circles, squares, and triangles that were supposed to lie at the heart of nature. Even so, DNA is still a beautiful double spiral. Rainbows describe a perfect arc, and from the viewpoint of airplane pilots, they are complete circles. Baseball pitchers can, and must, calculate what kind of curve, or no curve, the ball will follow on its way to the plate. If nature exhibits these designs in the everyday world, but is built from totally random events in the quantum world, a huge disparity has arisen and needs to be resolved. One possibility, offered by Roger Penrose, is that design exists in a region beyond both worlds, where there is only pure mathematics. Here, Penrose proposes, we encounter immortal qualities that resemble the pure forms of Plato. Plato saw these forms as the origin of qualities like beauty, truth, and love. The notion that pure, divine love is the source of all love was very appealing. Linking the divine and the human came naturally to all traditional cultures. Penrose wasn't looking for a divine source for the cosmos, but he sees a purity in mathematics. Most mathematicians would agree. More important, if math exists beyond all created things, it stabilizes the constants and anchors reality in a place untouched by nature's chaos, roughness, and irregularity. Penrose's notion of Platonic forms in the domain of mathematics hasn't been widely accepted. He described these forms in objective terms, far from the subjectivity of love, truth, and beauty. Platonic existence, as I see it, refers to the existence of an objective external standard that is not dependent upon our individual opinions nor upon our particular culture. Penrose wants to base reality on a kind of perfection that is beyond all change. Even though his life's work was based on mathematics, he recognizes that there is a deeper kinship with Plato, who thought that everything in daily life,